Thank you for coming. And we have Applied Materials. I'm Tim Arcuri. I'm the semiconductor analyst here at Cowen, and very happy to have Bob Halliday with us, who's the CFO, and we have Mike Splinter. Sorry, Mike Sullivan, sorry, who does IR. So I guess I can lead off with some questions, and then we can open up to the audience. So I guess, first of all, Bob, everyone wants to talk about display. Suddenly, nobody cared about it before, and now suddenly everybody cares about it. So maybe you can spend a minute or two sort of walking through how much of the market you've served historically, how much of the market you're going to serve going forward, and maybe just walk through where the spending levels have been in the past, where they are this year, and sort of where you see them in the next few years to help us model what the earnings power of the display business can be.
Sure. So first, I'll talk about the display market, and then I'll talk about Applied's position in the display market. So the display manufacturers, the last several years, have spent about $8 billion a year on equipment, like Applied's and other people's. If you go back a number of years, most of that spending was on displays for TVs. What's grown in recent years has been displays for smaller screen sizes, phones and iPads and things like that. So if you look at the technology that's predominantly been used for that, it's LCD technology. So the capital intensity around LCD technology is significantly less than OLED technology. So as you know, one major phone manufacturer started OLED technology in the recent past. And the picture quality of an OLED screen, particularly on a small screen like your phone, is a lot better. Picture quality is better, refresh rate's better, I think power's better. It's better. It's a little more expensive. The main issues are manufacturability and stuff like that. So there's a finite number of people who can make those small screens. So now I'll do a little bit on Applied Materials' position, then I'll tell you what's going to potentially happen in the future. So Applied Materials has been in the display business for a long time. We initially had a strong CVD tool, which we sold extensively in TVs and then also into small screen sizes. We had a PVD tool we improved about 2 or 3 years ago, and now we sell that extensively for TVs and small screen sizes. Our sales in the market last year in 2015 were about 65% for TVs, particularly in China, about 35% for small screens. What happened when the OLED technology came out for small screens, we developed another new tool called an encapsulation tool, which is CVD technology, but encapsulates the phone. So it gives it many of the foldable, bendable, waterproof elements that new phones have. So that was an additional tool we didn't sell before. And we told people in the public domain that last calendar year, we had bookings, incremental bookings related to that of about $150 million. So that was the news to date. And then recently, we announced in our quarter just ended that we had bookings of $700 million in the display business. So to give you context, in the last several years, where total spending was $8 billion, and our percentage was kind of two-thirds TVs, one-third mobile, this year we projected at the beginning of the year that we were going to be one-third TVs this year, two-thirds mobile, because TVs were down a little bit and mobile was pretty good. That was what we projected last November. And our sales the last couple of years have been about $750 million. So our sales of $750 million as a percentage of total spending of the companies of $8 billion, we're about kind of 9% of the market. But where we competed in places like CVD, PVD, and also encapsulation, we were kind of like two-thirds share. So we were like 67% of the market, but only competing 12%, maybe recently 15% of the market. So we had high share, but only competing a smaller percentage of the market. What's happened recently is it looks like there's going to be a significant proliferation of OLED for more phones. And so we had orders of $700 million in the quarter. Again, $700 million in the quarter, our revenues per year used to be $750 million a year. And that was for TVs and phones. So we had $7 million of orders in the quarter. predominantly, the majority was for OLED applications, then some non-OLED phones and other stuff's in there too. What we said on the call was that it wasn't a one-quarter phenomenon. We thought that we would get orders beyond one quarter for things like this. We project that the total spending this year on equipment for displays, instead of being $8 billion, is probably about $14.6 billion roughly. That's with kind of a weak TV market, so heavily weighted towards mobile. People say, "Well, what else could happen, Bob? We haven't studied the display market." I'll spend five minutes on that, a couple minutes on that. All we have direct orders or hard line of sight is to this initial incremental build-out of the OLED for phones. Once they build this out, they'll probably be up around 33%-35% of the phones manufactured could have capacity for OLED screens. If the world wants more than 35% of the phones to have OLED screens, you could have another build-out of more phones. That's an upside we haven't projected. The only reason I'm telling you now, because everybody asks me the question, so I'm offering the answer. The other things that are incrementally useful are TVs typically come back. They might come back, traditional TVs, even in a place like China, where they're trying to build more TVs and spur the economy too. The third thing that could happen, and this is all speculative at this point, someday the people build TVs that are higher functionality, OLED TVs, which there's really nothing now today. To do that, to differentiate themselves from these LCD TVs that are being built in high volume in places like China. There are certain technical and manufacturing issues to build those large OLED TVs, but typically our customers solve those problems eventually. The final thing I'll add is there was a recent announcement that for virtual reality glasses like Oculus, there's a strong sentiment that you need OLED screens or you get nauseous with the visual experience. There are multiple vectors that would imply that there's some sustainability to capital spending for displays. All of it's speculative now, but most of it's positively biased. Oh, the final thing, that's the market. We kind of believed in the display market about 3 years ago, so we did several things. We developed an improved PVD tool. We actually developed, and I think it's in the public domain, we're selling it's a smaller market inspection tool. Then we have a couple other tools we started developing about two and a half years ago that we don't sell now, which we think will be well-received in the market. Those really wouldn't hit the revenue line till, if they're successful, end of 2017, 2018. On the market, generally a positive outlook, and our position generally trending upward.
Great, Bob. Thank you for that. I guess just that sort of begs the next question, which is around the revenue opportunity relative to what the total display CapEx is. If display CapEx is going to be $14.5 billion, maybe $15 billion this year, and you guys have historically gotten about 10% of the total amount this year, it should be a bit higher if you sort of play this out because of your SAM expansion, because of the NCAP tool now. You should get, I would think, low teens of that number, which would then beg the conclusion that by the time that these orders flow through and you get them and you revenue all this, that you could do $1.8 billion, $1.9 billion in a given year off of that $15 billion display CapEx. You ought to be in the high ones, and we can sort of talk about when that is. Is it fiscal 2016? No. Is it fiscal 2017? Probably. Where you could do a $1.8 billion-$1.9 billion a year in display. Is that math crazy? I mean.
It's half crazy, but I respect your sanity. Here's the deal. The biggest step function in the opportunity right now is the market's getting bigger. There's a little smaller step function in our immediate percentage of the market. The step function for us personally is the evaporator tool, which is not the evaporator tool, the encapsulation tool, and that helps us. The big step function on the OLED market right now in tool types is probably the evaporator tool, how you evaporate these blue, green, red emitters. We don't sell one of those right now, right? The market's going to go up. significantly, and our percentage of the market initially will go up moderately, probably not quite as high. But if we're successful in these other products, our percentage of market that we could address will go from kind of 15% that we could address to maybe 40%, but not the same share, right? So the bigger step function for us in addressable market is more end of 17, 18.
Okay, but even if, you know, even if I said that you're still sort of the same portion of the spend dollars you've been, I mean, you should still do mid ones.
Well, we're 2/3 share, roughly, on where we compete today. So if we're in the teens, low teens, you know, your number goes up, but it goes up pretty healthily. But if you get more products, it goes up a lot more. So I think we need the new products to go through the roof.
Got it. And can you just, on that topic, so there was a big display conference last week that I was at, and it became apparent, you know, listening to all these presentations, that materials, while materials are obviously very important in the semiconductor vertical, they're even more important in display.
Yeah.
And there's more of an interplay between materials and equipment, arguably in display, than there even is in semis. So when you think about your model, do you think that there's an argument that you want to be in the materials business, potentially in display, rather than just selling equipment?
That's a good question. We look at, we spend a lot of our time on how to grow the company within the traditional markets and business models, but also non-traditional ones, like changing into new markets. Like display is kind of new, incrementally new for us. But also we look at things like materials and different business models. We're okay with doing it. We're trying to figure out how to make money on it. So we're open-minded on it. We agree that materials are a bigger deal than in display than semi. We got to figure out what's the play for us. But we're not religiously against materials. We're open-minded on it, but we haven't figured it out yet.
Any questions in the audience?
During the last fall, you suggested that the memory WFE could be flat in 2016 because NAND CapEx could be potentially up 35%, DRAM CapEx could be down 25%. But of that 35% growth in NAND, are you seeing a growing portion of CapEx, even over the last few months, stemming from an incremental planar insertion or two? Or I guess, is the market growth entirely coming from 3 NAND conversions and 3 NAND greenfield capacity?
Yeah, so you have two questions buried in there. Probably we're flattish in the beginning of your memory. It's probably up some now because the NAND thing's got up stronger. So we've raised our numbers internally for NAND. We've dropped a little bit on DRAM, but we were a little more positive on DRAM than everyone else early in the year. So net-net, I think memory's a little stronger than we thought early in the year. In terms of NAND, it's big spending. It's vast majority of it is on 3D. Most of it's conversions of 2D planar. So you came into the year at 150,000 wafers of 3D. At the end of the year, we thought you'd be 350, but might be a little north of that. So you get 200,000 incremental, and most of it's probably conversions. But the conversions are capital intensive for tools like ours, where they're not capital intensive, frankly, is lithography.
Bob, I had two questions. One question that I always get from investors is that the margins seem somewhat anchored in the mid 40s because the incremental revenue opportunities are in etch, which is an inherently lower margin business, and in display, which has a comparable operating margin but it has a lower gross margin. So how do you think about when investors, if they push you as much as they push me, they say, well, you know, this company should have higher gross margins than 44%, than 44 to 45%. How do you? And I know that, you know, that's a big focus of yours is to get margins up. But how do you do that in the context of your incremental opportunities being at optically lower margins?
That's a great question. We harangue the whole company endlessly on gross margins because we sort of say the exact same thing. We should have higher gross margins, and we change everybody's bonus plans, in fact, right? So we agree with you. If you go look at what's going on with the company right now, we were at 40.9 in 2012. We got to 42.1 in 2013, got up to 44.1 in 2014, went backwards to 42.9 last year. Why'd we go backwards last year, you idiots, right? If you go look at it, mix hurt us pretty big. Even we lost over three-tenths of a point, three or four, just on the service business grew a lot, which everyone's happy about. It generates a lot of cash. Operating margin's good, but gross margin less. We lost a few points on etch grew significantly for us last year. Foundry cut CapEx last year, which hurt us a little bit on some of our higher margin tools. Mix is what killed us last year. I had the guys, this year, the mix is probably trending against us again because it's going to be a strong, as Tim said, etch and display year, and probably next year, too. Even with that unfavorable mix, our gross margins will probably hold this year, 42.9, 43, with unfavorable mix. What we're doing to remediate that is we're doing pretty well on reducing product costs, probably more rapidly than we have in the past. Two, we're doing a better job of pitching our products to our customers in terms of how we sell them, right? Now, the question to really move the needle more, you got to come out with disruptive products with high share, and you know it ahead of time. We think in display, for instance, some of the two new products, we think they're going to be pretty good products that are differentiated. That could be incremental opportunity from some of the ones we have. It'll be positive. We think in semi, some of the products are, some are in more competitive markets, frankly. If we do something in optical or e-beam, those tend to be higher margin stuff. Number one, I agree with you, it's probably our biggest challenge. We put a lot of focus on it. We'll probably make some progress, but I think we'll mostly just offset the unfavorable mix.
Just on the point of, I think your point about the sort of incremental opportunities in semis to improve margins are predominantly related to the inspection business. Do you think that the merger, when it goes through, will appreciably help or hurt your inspection business?
The biggest driver in our business is do we have winning products, right? We are developing new products in inspection, which we think are good products, including e-beam, right? We think our opportunity for some share in margin is okay, independent of the merger. Would you say, what's the impact of the merger? That's kind of speculative on my part. Depends on how customers feel about the merger, and do they want to extract a pound of flesh? I don't know yet.
Okay, you think it's still too early to say whether or not.
It's too early. I think it's not.
Positive for you.
It might be positive for us, but it's a little hard to say.
At worst, it's neutral.
I think at worst it's neutral.
Could potentially be.
I think between share and position, it's neutral to positive.
Great. One more topic that I always get a lot of questions on is the financial model.
Sure.
What the long-term earnings power of the company is. I think you guys laid out a financial model that with TEL, we could dream about a mid-$2 earnings number. That was what was out there, and that's why the stock went to $25 before the merger fell apart. Now you're guiding to a basically $2 annualized number, and that's before display even really kicks in. Now, granted, that's a very strong SSG quarter, but you've also gained a lot of SSG share, too. Can you talk about maybe what the prospective earnings power could be for the company? I get some people saying, "Hey, could Applied do $3?" What would it take for them to do $3? What would the WFE have to be? What would display have to be? I can create a couple scenarios that are not at all outside the realm of possibility where you would earn $3. Now, is that a peak number? Is that a sustainable number? You can sort of argue about that, but it seems like given some of these vectors that the dreamable earnings number has gone from mid-$2s to potentially $3. Can you actually talk about that?
Yeah, I'll give you the influencers, right? If you go look at what we put up several years ago, the first time we put up the model was kind of 2013, and then we renewed it the last couple of years. How have we done? We'll probably hit or beat the revenue line. The service business, which got down to $2 billion in 2013, we said we'd get to $3 billion and change, $3.1. We'll hit that number. Service business will probably keep growing. Service is flatlining, frankly, for a long time. The display business in 2012, and it was a little bit of a down year, was about $450 million. In the model, we said we'd get to $105.9, just display. It's buried in the $1.3 number. We'll beat that number, and it's probably still biased upwards from there. Semi, we'd say that at $33.5 billion WFE, we'd have market share 21.9%. We'll probably hit or beat that number. There was $250 million of solar and other. That's probably in the ballpark. Maybe a little risk in that, but it's not big. We'll probably hit the revenue line or beat it. We did a lot of self-help on the bottom of the P&L. The weighted average share count was 1.1 in 2018. We've already hit that number. We finished the buyback. We'll probably beat it some, but we don't know how much. Tax rate was 17.5%. We're at 15%. We'll probably get a little more improvement out of that on time. The bigger step function on that is after 2019, when we reduce the rate. It'll trend out a little bit, but bigger step function 2019. Gross margin's been our Achilles heel, and frankly, it's mostly mix. I had the guys run our model where every single product that exists in gross margins used 2014 mix, and we'd be at, I think it was 44.7% or 8% gross margins. We would've been ahead of model if mix was constant with 2014, and 2014 mix wasn't that great for us, right? Gross margins, I don't know if there's a lot of upside, right? OpEx, we're managing super tightly. In 2012, our OpEx was 2.188. This year, it's about 2.3, four years later, and revenues have gone up a lot. We'll manage OpEx tightly, but it'll go up a little bit, but it'll go down as a percentage of revenues. You got to get to the revenue line to grow the EPS. Most of the lines of P&L, we have a little bit of self-help. What's the revenue line going to do? I pretty honestly, I guess that's the wrong word to use up here, but I really believe that we can outgrow whatever markets we're in. Well, Bob, is this just hope? No, we do a pretty good job of segmenting markets, and we invest a higher percentage of our money into product development. That's stuff that gets a return. We squeeze overhead pretty hard. We have a bunch of products in the pipeline that I have line of sight to that look pretty good, and our nature is to find those things and do them. I think we'll outgrow whatever markets we're in a few points. Some of the stuff we invested in, like we started the display stuff two and a half, three years ago, right? The semi stuff was about a couple of years ago. We're seeing the fruition now. We have stuff in the CTO's office that takes more like six, seven years, and that's about three years in. I think we'll outgrow whatever markets we're in several points, right? The dynamic, the $2 is not our endpoint. We'll keep going up some, but we have to get more visibility into the markets and the products to drive the revenue line. We'll probably talk about that more in the Analyst Day.
I guess it largely comes down to what you think that the SSG market or what you think that the WFE market can do. I guess that sort of dovetails into a question about China, and I've asked you this many different ways. If sort of normalized WFE is in the low 30s, let's call it, which is what it will be this year, it's sort of what it was last year. Now, granted, you guys this year are going to be up 10%-15% in a flat to slightly up WFE market, so obviously you're actually gaining share. It seems reasonable that China, not the multinationals building fabs in China, but the indigenous China projects could add a couple billion dollars. I think you used the number, which I totally agree with, of $20 billion worth of nominal WFE spend, if you believe what everyone's talking about. If that gets done over four years, that's like at least a, you put like a BS factor on that, and that's still a couple billion per year extra. I guess the question is, A, when do you think that this indigenous China money will become meaningful for WFE? B, do you think that that makes you any more confident in you getting to these upper levels in terms of WFE? I think you guys have put 37 up as your upper limit. Does it give you any more confidence that that's feasible?
Yeah, China provides upward bias in WFE. It does it in two ways. I'll give you the data. They've talked about spending $20 billion-$30 billion over kind of 5 years. That's $4 billion-$6 billion. Now, the question is, how much is truly incremental to WFE? Is there some that was being counted in China already? Is there some that used to be done in another country, now they're moving it to China? My take is that it provides two things. It provides some incremental spending for several years of, I'm just guessing, $1 billion-$2 billion. It also provides a second thing, which is a shock absorber on WFE. Because if there's a little softness anywhere else, I think you'll pick it up in China. I think you could probably be pretty comfortable that WFE is not going to go too low in the next few years. The floor is more solid, kind of 32+, and you've got upside from there probably. Because you have line of sight that China's going to spend, not just for pure capacity reasons, but for national reasons. You know that the V-NAND spending is going to get done because they have to get it done. You have line of sight that WFE is probably pretty healthy the next few. You have a pretty good floor, and China provides both a solid floor and probably some upside. It gives you a greater probability you hit the higher numbers that Tim talked about. It gives you opportunity for the higher numbers and a better floor.
Any questions from the audience?
We pay for questions today.
Can you just touch more on Lam and KLA and just, you talked about products, but just how that would potentially change the landscape and sort of talk about your relationship with KLA and what that change is, if much at all.
Well, a little bit. I'll tell you Applied's existing state. We sell display and semi and services, a little bit solar. In semi, which is relevant, about 60% of our semi equipment, we don't compete with Lam or KLA. That's implant, CMP, PVD pretty much. I'm missing a few. Epi. We do compete in etch, CVD, ALD is emerging more and more, and inspection. We've actually done pretty well in etch several years, CVD a couple of years. ALD, we have a new product, and inspection, we have new products. We're doing pretty well. Now, those companies are doing well, too. I'm not bad-mouthing them, but we already have some product momentum that is fundamental to us doing well in those markets. I think independent of their potential merger, Applied has some momentum in those markets, which are about 40% of where we compete. We're gaining share in those markets pretty much. Part of it's around these inflections, whether it be V-NAND or some emerging foundry stuff, things like that. I think independent of the merger, we're doing okay. Whether the merger is a disruption to them or a distraction or customers are positive or negative, hard for me to value that. I heard that for two years almost with us, and we came out of the merger pretty good shape. I think it's a neutral to positive for us, but I don't know how to monetize it.
Earlier in your display discussion, you mentioned that current day of CapEx could get to 30%-35% of smartphones being all in the factory. When do you think we get there? Is it 4-6 months?
2017, probably. Towards the second half of 2017.
Your lead times?
6-9 months. It used to be 9 months, but we've primed the pump a little bit in the supply chain.
Before that, you see the.
We saw some of the orders last quarter. We think we might see more.
Some of those display products that you bought two or three years ago.
We didn't buy them. We started developing them.
How far ahead of the competition do you think you are?
One of them pretty far ahead, and one, there's a product out there that's very similar, but only one guy makes it. There's several. Japanese, Koreans, it's spread out. I guess it's all that, right?
Yeah. There's companies that you wouldn't recognize as much because it doesn't come up as often, but yeah, OLVAC is a competitor in Japan. Joosung is a competitor in Korea. and a bunch of companies that are participating in the space. Where we compete, we tend to have pretty strong product positions. The company got into the display market through CVD, evolved the technology that we're using in wafer manufacturing and brought it to the display market. So established a really strong position there, as Bob said, out of the PVD, and now the new thin film encapsulation product. That product is actually one of the largest from a revenue point of view in our OLED business, but it also is a derivative of the CVD technology. And as if we think about our display business, we're only serving, as Bob said, about 12% of the market, 12-15% of the market. With the couple of new products that we have in the pipeline over the next 2-3 years, it's possible that we could address as much as 40% of the total display market. And as you may know, in semiconductor, we address 60% of the spend. So this is a real opportunity for us to go from small, focused and small, strong, to some new markets where there's a lot of growth potential for us.
To what extent do you work with the existing display customers when trying to bring new products to the market?
A lot. Yeah. We ship early tools to them. We do develop. We ask for them questions of development. They pull for us sometimes because they want some of this emerging technology in the tools. So pretty closely.
What's the longest lead time product right now?
For us, yeah. It used to be 9 months. Now it's 6, sort of. It's a supply chain, too. Some the same, some different. Sorry, Mike.
Can you talk, Bob, about I think that display is a bit different, and the way that the initial build is working is that there is obviously one particular customer that is via another company that they also compete with. They're sort of procuring components through that frenemy, if you will. But it seems to me that there's some unique IP that you've brought to the table, to both of those two companies, that maybe is potentially unique to that one particular situation. Is that the right way to think about it, or is this no different than any other situation where you're developing technology for the market, and they happen to be the initial adopter of that technology, and then you'll sell the same technology to everybody else?
So going back a little bit, parsing what you said earlier and this, and then I'll do more specifically on this. There's kind of three waves in my mind for this display stuff for Applied. There's maybe three and a half. There's this, we've been developing some new products that additively went in, say over wave one. Two, the market's grown a lot with the first build out. The two other relevant waves that might happen is a further build out of OLED and things like that, and our further strengthening of our product position. The latter two, further build out of the display market, including OLED, and further build out of our product positions, pretty good chance they happen. But they're speculative right now. In terms of the specific products we're developing in our relationship with customers, there is a leading edge customer who's very strong in display today and has a lead. They're pulling for us on several of our tools. And then there are other customers who are trying to catch up or pulling on similar tool sets, right? So there's a pretty aggressive pull from the leading edge customers and the other customers.
Maybe can you talk, just to sort of shift gears back to SSG, it's sort of interesting to me to, hear myself asking you questions, and I'm asking questions about display, and people didn't care about displays 6 or so months ago. So let's go back to the piece of the company that is the predominance of the revenue. Can you talk about 3D NAND and what I think I asked you last call about the 200K that's going to get added this year? So from 150 up to 350, sort of middle of the range. Of that 200, I think you said half is greenfield and half is conversion. And can you go through what the sort of the math around the opportunity for you in greenfield versus in conversion? I would assume that greenfield obviously is more WFE, but your share of that WFE is smaller. But the inverse would be true for conversion. So can you talk about that maybe?
Sure. So What's going to happen this year? They're going to get a total of 200,000 wafer starts more of 3D, but they're also going to, and a fair amount of that's going to be converted from 2D to 3D. They're also continuing to do some 2D shrinks, right? Some older stuff, right? This year, the spending might be half and half. The numbers our guys gave us, and the ratio between adds and converts is kind of one of the hardest things for them to get at. What they told us, I think it was this year, was 90,000 this year on adds and several hundred thousand, including planar, for converts. In terms of the 3D thing, in my mind, it's kind of half and half the model. If you look at the dollar cost to do that, if you do a greenfield, I'll pick 48 layers, V-NAND, that's about $5 billion of equipment. If you do a convert from 2D, it's $3 billion, right? Now, what's a little counterintuitive at first, when they were doing conversions on planar, our share of the conversion was lower than our share of greenfield because they reused all our equipment and bought litho. When you go to V-NAND, our share of conversion is actually higher than greenfield because they don't buy the litho now, right? Lam is in the same position. If you do a $5 billion greenfield, our dollar value is pretty damn good because it's all about deposition etch. Dropping down to a $3 billion reuse, our dollars don't go down that much because what goes down the most is, frankly, litho because they got the tools. That if it's a 50/50 model, it's pretty capital intensive around deposition etch, CMP, some implant. Our opportunity is pretty damn good. If you look at our share, in 2012, Applied's share in NAND was under 15%. Our share of WFE NAND spending this year is going to be, we think, comfortably over 20%, which is driven by, it's more weighted towards spending on DRAM, NAND, etch deposition, CMP, things like that, which helps Lam too. Two, even in a reuse model, it's favorably biased towards us and Lam. Three, we're gaining some share by those products.
You would say, headline, that your dollar opportunity is not all that different in a greenfield versus a conversion.
Not much different. It was a lot worse in 2D. It's not much worse in a 3D. It's a little less because they reused some deposition etch, but not a lot.
We have time for one more question from the audience.
Any preliminary thoughts on 2017 WFE flat out there?
Positives up, because you have certain underpinnings. You got China underpinnings, you got V-NAND underpinnings. DRAM's pretty low this year, maybe there's a little upside. I think foundry's still okay next year. They'll finish building out 10, they'll go to seven. China, SMIC. Logic's probably flattish, I guess. Flat top.
Well, Bob and Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.